the wealthier, the happier? Welcome to our podcast where we discuss a neuroscientific approach in detangling the relation between emotions and socioeconomic status. In a world where the gap between the rich and poor can be so divided, the question whether socioeconomic status has an effect on our brains and how it affects our day-to-day life has raised the interest of researchers across fields. In this podcast episode, we want to talk about this very important issue from a neuroscientific point of view, taking into consideration the latest research, researchers' opinions, and possible interventions. Now, it is well known that low socioeconomic status, or SES, which is often defined as a combination of several aspects such as income, occupation, and level of education, has a significant impact on stress levels. Stress, in turn, causes an elevated neural and behavioral reactivity to negative emotion. The first study we examined, in particular, focuses on the impact of low family income on the emotional availability of first-time mothers. They measured the activation of a part of the brain called the amygdala, which is key in emotion and threat processing. They measured this in response to positive and negative infant faces. They used an fMRI, and an altered pattern of activation was found. Mothers had a reduced amygdala response to positive infant faces, but an increased amygdala response to negative infant faces. The mother's response to baby's emotions is associated with suboptimal parenting behaviors, such as lower maternal sensitivity to positive emotions, as well as a higher maternal intrusiveness. Maternal intrusiveness is a concern because it may be a risk factor for insecure attachment and suboptimal infant socio-emotional development.
Another study investigated the relationship between social status and neuronal activity in connection with understanding other people. In this study, brain activity was measured while the participants performed tasks in which they processed faces. The most important result was that people from lower SES were better at recognizing feelings of others. Specifically, that means that lower SES was associated with greater activity in one region often involved in mentalizing and in the amygdala, especially when seeing angry faces. On the one hand, these results are associated with empathy, but on the other hand, it is associated with increased stress in emotional processing and therefore also with emotional regulation. One possible explanation for the stronger focus on other people's emotions is social dependence. That is to say, people who are more socially dependent may have greater motivation to rely on other people. Another explanation could come from the previous study we presented. The mother's increased emotional response to negative faces could explain the increased amygdala response here. In a different study, it was found that the region for mentalizing and the amygdala are less well connected in people with lower SES, even though both regions show higher activation in tasks involving emotions. This could be linked to increased stress, less control of emotions, and poorer emotion regulation.
We are very lucky to have Charo Rueda on our podcast, a professor of cognitive neuroscience at the University of Granada. Rueda's research focuses on attention and the types of factors that influence its development during childhood, for example, socioeconomic upbringing. We thought to first untangle Rueda's main findings before you hear our informative interview with her. In the study, Rueda investigated 9 to 12 months old attention regulation. This has two aspects. Firstly, the ability to remove attention from threatening cues, and secondly, the ability to switch attention. Now, how does this relate to our theme on the impact of socioeconomic status, or SES, on emotions? The contribution of both temperament and SES on infants' attention regulation skills was investigated. The voluntary control of attention is a central aspect of self-regulation. Disengaging attention is one of the first mechanisms that emerges during infancy, as babies learn that looking away from stressful things regulates their distress. And so this control builds the foundations for more complex emotion regulation skills that we need later on in life. Though Rueda and her team did not find a relationship with a general SES index, they found that lower family income specifically was related to a poor ability to disengage from faces and a poor attentional flexibility, showing a general effect of family resources over the development of attentional flexibility skills. Overall, they propose a mediation model to explain how SES has an indirect effect on attention flexibility, which was mediated by infants' temperament.
The way that we can explain this is that children raised in low SES environments are more likely to be exposed to more struggles, and with this, obviously, higher stress levels. Then, negative affect, which is usually associated with lower SES, appears to affect the development of attentional flexibility in infants.
We read another article that found that lower SES was associated with mothers' heightened neural sensitivity to infants' negative emotions. And your article found that SES didn't affect engagement from threat-related stimuli, but was associated with poor attentional flexibility. How can you relate these two findings?
Well, one of the most threatening stimuli for a mom would be distress in their babies. So if you are living in a very adverse, violent, noisy environment, and you are raise enough money to nourish your baby properly, of course, that negative effect in their babies is going to capture attention and is going to cause a lot of distress in the mothers. What we found is that there is a marginally significant relationship between being raised in a poor environment and the children having higher negative affectivity. And when you have higher negative affectivity, the attentional mechanism doesn't seem to work as well. There is a relationship between negative affectivity in the babies and lower capacity to attentional control. The relationship between low SES and low attention in babies was mediated by higher negative affectivity in those babies. We found that children with high level of negative affectivity and poor attention control were the ones that were less able to disengage from threatening stimuli. So yes, there is an impact.
Also, I read in your article how the first mechanisms of attentional control and disengaging relates to emotion processing later on in adulthood. Could you explain that connection, please?
The brain is kind of it's like building a house. So the foundations are very important for what you are going to build later on. And so if there is a particular variables that impact the very foundation of attentional control mechanisms in the brain, that person can develop a system that is not optimal later on.
For the discussion about practical implications and intervention methods in the field of emotion regulation and socioeconomic status, we asked Sophia Schwarz-Salazar for her input as a social psychologist. Her research is focused on inequality perception, feminism, support for collective action, attitudes toward policies that pursue redistribution and equality, and how different groups think and behave in relation to these constructs. First of all, we asked ourselves if it is even possible to talk about intervention methods when we still see a need for further investigation. Schwarz-Salazar told us that she, quote-unquote, firmly believes that what is socially constructed is socially modified and destroyed, highlighting that we as a society do have an impact on social structures and therefore should already start to consider interventions. Keeping this in mind, we mulled over what possible intervention methods we could think of. When we went over that exact same question with Sophia, she elaborated on key aspects she believes can be used as starting points in interventions. Key point number one being raising awareness and destroying myths, as she called it. Raising awareness, especially in the aspect that there is quote-unquote a diversity of reasons that lead people to have a lower socioeconomic status and the external obstacles that people encounter to improve their economic situation. Because as she says, the explanations we give to people's economic situation are also relevant. She also stresses the point that we have to take into consideration the different types of inequalities and make people notice that there are several construction sites to our big project called Equality. An already researched proposition she mentioned was unconditional cash transfers to people in poverty situations and from low SES backgrounds that have been proven to have limited but positive effects over physical and mental health and access to services such as health systems and educational systems, which might improve socioeconomic status. More generally, she proposes progressive taxation or providing financial aid to people with fewer resources. We had to cut our interrogation short here, although we still know that there is a lot we haven't discussed. Maybe you guys can think of other intervention methods and possible future research. We would love to hear about your ideas in the comments. We want to thank Sophia Schwarz-Salazar and Charo Rueda again for their expertise. We greatly appreciated their time and effort. And a great thank you as well to all of our listeners. We hope to have triggered your thoughts and made you start thinking about this very recent and important topic. Have a great rest of the day and tune in next time.